Well, I am going to talk to you a bit on the work that we have been doing, or I've been doing. I've been involved for the last, let's say, 15 years on indicators and sustainability assessment, and how are we using this in different contexts, different tools, and especially how are we trying to operationalize the findings that we have in this the work. So the work is not all related to CIMIT activities. Some are non necessarily CIMIT activities. No? And just to start saying, okay, well, let's get clear the fact that these systems that we are analyzing are complex systems, which normally that's one of the differences in developed versus developing countries. That in developing countries, most of the times, systems have multiple components with interactions and feedbacks between these components. No? A lot on recycling, and the efficiency of the system is based a lot on the recycling part of the functioning of the system. And in developing countries, as opposed to most of the developed areas where, in developed areas where profit is the main driver of everything, in developing countries we have multiple objectives related to food security, to profit, to risk management, etc., etc. Now, we have limited resources, and there is competition of resources, so we have to know where to allocate in these complex systems to allocate the available resources. No? And then these components are used to distribute, let's say, risk. And also, as normally it is family agriculture, the benefits and the cost of work, they are distributed within the family household members. So to develop alternatives, sustainable intensification alternatives, we need to understand these multiple objectives and to try to minimize the trade-offs that exist. In every intervention we do, there will be trade-offs, no? And try to maximize the synergies if we can identify them. In, well, sustainability, you know about this environmental, economic, and social dimensions of the concept of sustainability. Therefore, indicators, they have to be able to capture that different dimensions. No? And in the beginning of the sustainability assessment, after the 87, in the 80s and 90s, many people start developing indicators, lists of indicators. So the livestock discipline developed a list of 200 different possible indicators for livestock. The forestry people, same idea, but without many guidelines on how to choose relevant indicators for this specific area. Then there was a trend, and also just the indicators and not a strategy to integrate the information of all these indicators for an integrated assessment. So because of that reason, there came a lot of, in the 90s, there came a lot of indexes of sustainability, giving weight to different indicators and trying to put it in an index of sustainability, which had the advantage that the indicators were already set, no, and their weight, but that's actually a problem for those, because some indicators are relevant for one case and not relevant in another case, and the weight we give to indicators is going to change depending on the situation and the farm type. So after that, they came more like with FAO, they developed this framework for evaluation of sustainable land management, and it was more like, okay, let's develop frameworks, more generic frameworks, that allow us to choose and to derive specific indicators for a specific area and to quantify and integrate this information. So basically these frameworks, what they have is this meta concept, no, sustainability or sustainable intensification. Then we see what are the main attributes of these concepts, some criteria to end up with some indicators to be able to, when we integrate the information and we do the analysis, go back to our meta concept that we want to assess or we want to look at. No? So based on that, we developed in the 90s the MESMIS framework, which is a framework that the acronym is in Spanish. We developed it in Mexico, which is a framework for the assessment of sustainability using indicators in Spanish. which have a framework, but also case studies, a lot of training, a database and on different experiences about assessment and the use of indicators. No? And lately we have developed some interactive models that they are available on the site. If you just type NESMI, so I can give you access to those. Basically, the framework is, as most of the analysis that we do, is we describe the systems, no? Then we try to identify the main objectives and critical points of those systems for sustainability, and I go back to that. Then we select specific locally relevant indicators and measurable indicators. Then we measure those, and then we integrate results. We come up with conclusions, and those conclusions should allow us to design or come up with new systems that then we will have to recreate the assessment. Normally, this is like saying we have evaluation and design; they are together. No, we cannot evaluate if we don't. We cannot design if we are not have means for evaluation, and there is no use of evaluating something that we are not designing alternatives. No? So the idea is to have this iterative cycle. Basically, in this framework and in many others, we got inspired by the work basically of Gordon Conway, working on agroecosystem properties, and looking at, okay, these are not indicators, but these are large properties, generic properties that we can look at, productivity, stability of a system, about the system, but also how the system reacts to changes, to normal variations or shocks like resilience or permanent change. These are very generic aspects, no, or concepts that we can accommodate to whatever discipline we are looking at. No, we can think about the resilience of the system to price change or to weather event or biological or social or economic aspects. No, and they are also generic enough to be able to be applied for different disciplines and for different scales. We can think of the resilience of a field or a plot or a farm or a region, a municipality, a continent, etc. So those are very generic elements that allow us to then, and in the Mayer-Smith framework and in other frameworks, is used to say, okay, let's derive a specific locally relevant indicators for these different aspects. So we did that, and so the way we do it is we start again with these properties or attributes of sustainable systems, no? And then we go down trying to understand the objectives of local stakeholders, farmers and non-farmers, in relation to those aspects, no? To identify large criteria and then specific indicators with a unit that can be measured or modeled or assessed in some way or another. So that's basically the way that in the Mesmis we managed to make a generic framework to derive indicators without giving guidelines on these are the good indicators, these are the bad indicators. So, well, as you know, some indicators, well, they need to be easy to measure, they have to be relatively cheap, they have to be based on the desired phenomena, sensible to change. We have seen a lot of indicators related to that they are not going to change with our alternatives. In some applications of the MESMIS, they come up with soil texture as an indicator of soil fertility, and that's, yeah, it can be, but that's not useful. If we do A or B or C, that's not going to change, so it's not sensible to change. No? They have to be based the most possible in scientific knowledge. Then they need to be easy to communicate and useful for decision making, no? Because that's at the end what we want with these indicators. Now, normally we could end up with a large list of indicators, no? But we have to be in some way selective. No? They have to be, well, non-redundant and non-exhaustive, and there are some specifically good, especially good indicators that are like soil organic matter, for example. It's a good indicator because it brings information about many things, about reliability in relation to water holding capacity of the soil, about efficiency in the use of fertilizers, etc. No? And then, well, they need to represent these attributes of sustainable systems, no? Together with the specific objectives of actors. No? Now, once we have the group of indicators, we have to make sure that we are not only having like environmental indicators or economic indicators or social, but we have to have a good balance between those dimensions. And well, the most important is that they have to be developed within a participatory process with the people that is going to actually take decisions and actually communicate these findings. Just to show you one case study, an analysis made in the Chinampa system in Mexico with these floating gardens in Mexico City, really interesting, trying to compare the greenhouse new trend in this area versus the traditional agricultural system. No? And then we get an assessment of the greenhouse versus the chinampas, which is the traditional agricultural system. So what is important here is to see like the large range of indicators that we are using to assess these systems. No? And the very specificity of those. So canal conservation, for example, that's very specific to this system, which will not be in another place. Now here, normally what we'll do within the MESMIS is really based in terms of with NGOs and local actors doing more participatory kind of assessment. And one of the issues is that, well, we do it through interviews and some direct measurements and etc. But we normally compare two systems, and it implies a lot of work comparing these two systems and little room for trade-off analysis, because we only have two snapshots different and we don't know exactly if there is a trade-off or if they are just behaving differently. Well, these MESMIS have, because of its simplicity, has had a high adoption in Latin America. No? We have many case studies that we are not leading or carrying out, but local NGOs, universities are actually using the methodology based on a series of books published in Spanish and some papers in English, and so they mainly used within the Latin American context. When in this kind of experience where we can start thinking of trade-offs and synergies is when we do a meta-analysis. So we took some of the published in journals cases of these MESMIS and tried to see what are the relationships between different indicators. So by using different case studies all over the place. And we could see here, for example, that in quite repeatedly, we had when we had an increase in agrobiodiversity, we had also an increase in productivity. So this has helped us to work with local NGOs in different places. So, for example, now in Guatemala, with a project Buenamilpa from finance by USAID, to say, okay, well, we are going to focus on agrobiodiversity and productivity, and we are going to look for alternatives suitable to those farmers that increase both aspects. No? So we can start by doing this kind of meta-analysis, understanding some of these trade-offs, but basically some of these synergies that we can use to design alternative farming systems. Now, as I said, this MESMIS is very participatory locally, so it's mainly applied by NGOs, with academics, or with farmer cooperatives. No? And it allows you to compare two systems, but it's not easy to capture and to quantify these trade-offs. No? So these were modeling tools, and I think we will have I can imagine that we will have more on modeling in the next talks. But well, these modeling tools allow us to capture the diversity of farming systems, no? In general terms, by principal component analysis, typologies, etc., and to assess the ex post and especially ex ante, the contribution of different alternatives to their sustainability. No? And of course allows us to identify and quantify main trade-offs and synergies. So I will go through 2-3 modeling exercises, no, that we have developed lately. One is this, we developed a very simple food security indicator where the potential food available of a farm household, which is this, is coming from the different livestock, cash off-farm, cash crops and food crops. It goes all to a, let's say, a pool of available food, food is available, kilocalories. No? So the cash, the off-farm and the cash crop, we assume that it is used to buy the staple food of the specific area. And then in relation to the demand of the family, we can make a food security ratio, food availability ratio. So that this is the results of, we apply this framework, this simple, very simple indicator. I know it's not a, it's not food security indicator, it's a potential food availability indicator. To over 13,000 farm households in sub-Saharan Africa, getting data sets from different projects. No? And we could see, so we ordered the farm households in terms of their food availability from zero to the maximum. And then we could see the contribution of these, the different activities to the food security of the farm households. What is interesting here, that so some of the things that when we saw it struck us, well, first that the figure of food insecure farm households was not very different to what we have in literature. And that we see here is that the consumption of crops, the green one, it sort of stops at the level at which the family is satisfied in terms of kilocalories. And then when additional resources, they start doing other things. They start doing cash crops, livestock. And that surprises us, the importance of off-farm income for the sub-Saharan context. No? Another model that we developed recently is data envelope analysis using frontier efficiency, where we have different farms with an input-output line, and then we identify the efficiency gap of each farm in relation to this envelope. And then we could do that for different farm types. And so for increasing your efficiency, you could either decrease your inputs or with the same level of inputs, increase your output. So we quantify that for each farm. And what we could see is that different farm types, so diversified crop livestock farmers versus maize-based farmers, they could have different trajectories, let's say, to improve their efficiency. But those are only one indicator, modeled, but only one indicator. There are some exercises with the first indicator related to greenhouse gas emissions and see the trade-off between those aspects of food security and mitigation. But now we are developing, we are using this farm design model, which is an optimization model developed by Wageningen University, which basically does all the, we put all the transfers of nutrients and labor and money between the different components of the system. And then we can, for example, this using that model for Guatemala, again within this Buena Milpa project, no, to identify which farm types are strong in which aspects and which farm types are strong in other aspects or weak in other aspects. The idea here is that the model allows you to optimize the system. So this is the application of the same model, but for India, in Bihar in India, where we can see the trade-off between water use and profit. So the water balance is zero, is the current situation of the farm. No? And then you can see, well, if they are using more water, they will be in the negative side. If you're using less water, they will be in the positive side. And then we see, like, for example, farmer 3 and 5, they don't have much room for maneuver in terms of water and profit. But the farm type 2, no, has a special... it can improve a lot its efficiency in terms of water balance, but we see that there is a special trade-off. If you start saving water, you will have a reduction of your operating profit. So just to finish, because I some final remarks. Well, so the systems are complex and require integrated approaches for their evaluation. We have to be able to do multi-criteria assessment, and indicators are the way to do that kind of multi-criteria assessment and allow us to identify and quantify the trade-offs. No? Then systems theory, again, in relation to these properties or attributes of sustainable systems, can give us a good basis to derive specific indicators. We have to have locally relevant indicators. So I know that there are a lot of initiatives trying to set up the list of indicators that we need for sustainable intensification. And yeah, if you try to apply those to Australia or to Central America or to North America, they will be not relevant. No? Then modeling tools can be a useful tool to quantify these trade-offs and identify the areas for greatest opportunities. No? And then, well, these sustainability assessments, sustainable intensification indicators, et cetera, they has to be in some way embedded in the decision-making process of local actors or donors or farmers and technicians. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention.
So I actually think, wait a second, we've got a little bit of time, so if there are any questions and answers, we can take a few and then we'll have more discussion afterwards. Does anyone want to ask a question? And I'll ask each person asking questions to identify themselves too, please.
My name is Cheryl from the University of Florida. So Santiago, I really appreciate how you keep using the framework you put together. Can you tell me more about how you use participation for selecting indicators, perhaps even developing them, and what do you do with the output to get change? Do you work on that?
What do you do
with the output? Okay, so you have your spider graph,
exactly.
Your pie plot, your envelopes. How do you then work with the stakeholders for change?
Exactly. So two things. One is, in the MESMIS framework, as it is considered already from the very beginning a cyclic process, we have had several case studies that we, based on this comparison of different systems, let's say, they go into a second cycle and they try to develop new alternatives. So in Michoacán, in Mexico, which is one of our first case studies, they are now like in the fifth cycle. No? And they have been able to adapt to add more leguminous to the system because they realized that they were having a problem of soil fertility. They are trying to add some forage into the system because they had a problem of carrying capacity, too many animals. So the idea, and we have seen it because these are being taken by NGOs that are working there. So it in some way informed them into what to look next. Now, I had some slides, but I didn't have time to present, and Tim asked me especially to focus on that, but I couldn't make it, is to, in the developed world, I worked for 5 years in the south of France, using this same kind of framework, more modeling, but participatory modeling. Now, in the south of France, participatory modeling is good. You can put farmers together with a computer, each of them, and you can really play with them, and you have the syndicate of rice producers, and they feel more comfortable with the modeling exercises. So, for example, the modeling exercise we did with participatory modeling exercise we did with the southern, the Camarga farmers, that in some way allow them not to necessarily translate them into practical things, but more into political. So they were negotiating their subsidy for rice within the European Union and the France, and then they used the modeling tools and the assessment to show to politicians, look, if we do this, they wanted to cut the subsidy of rice. If we cut the subsidy of rice, we will have this kind of land use pattern, no? And that will be the possible consequences. So they are used in some way for very technical, but other ways to more political and lobbying strategies.
I think we have another question up front.
Thanks very much, Sandro, for the nice presentation. I have a question that somewhat follows up on the first question and to your remark about the spatial differences or geographic differences in selecting these indicators, you know, if you're in Australia. Is there also a temporal change in selecting indicators that are identified as relevant in the first place, or not after visualizing these indicators, discussing them, may become redundant, others come in?
Yeah. I cannot say like it changed from one time to another because the indicators were not longer relevant in general terms, but mainly what we have a lot in the MESMICs, this last step on the recommendations. We stress a lot the fact that we have to have recommendations on the evaluation process itself. So what we have seen in these case studies that have gone through more than one cycle is that what they do is that they drop some indicators that they didn't feel they were useful, or they were not fulfilling some of the characteristics that I set. So the change in the indicator use has been mainly on operational aspects of evolving with evaluation, saying this indicator is not useful, or those two indicators are too similar, let's just only use one, but not really. I guess that if we did this before the mitigation thing was in, so this was done in the mid-90s, so I can imagine that if I look at more recent case studies, we may have more, let's say, mitigation indicators that we didn't have in the beginning. But in general, it's more related to the evaluation process.
I think we have one more question, and then we're going to move on to the next speaker.
In part of your presentation, you mentioned regionally specific indicators, and I'm wondering if you would suggest having different models for different regions and what scale those models would be. Or are you suggesting that those indicators just have less significance in different regions and they still are a component of the model? And the reason why I ask that is because usually we try to produce a model that's relevant for all situations, not necessarily one that's specific to each individual situation that someone would be in, because it kind of reduces the significance of the model.
Yeah. So in MESMIS, it's not a modeling approach, but more a development and locally applicable tool. Their indicators are really specific and measured specifically, so they are not in the modeling part. In terms of the other models, well, for example, the farm design, it generates a series of models, a series of indicators, some of them relevant. So, for example, it has a dry matter balance of the intake of the animals of the livestock systems. So when we apply the model to Guatemala, where livestock is really not that relevant, no, then we just take out those indicators and we don't go that deep into the validation of the results of the indicators. But the model itself is built with those indicators inside. So many of those models, they already have some of those indicators built in, and then you will have to drop them out when they are not relevant for your site. Now we are working also with the Wageningen University to try to adapt these models to our situations, because they developed a lot within the context of developed European agriculture. So we are trying to talk more about nutrition. So they added some indicators on nutritional aspects that they didn't have, because it was developed for European context. And now we added some aspects related to nutrition, to kilocalories, to proteins, vitamin, etc. But yeah, that's a problem when you do modeling, no? That it cannot be too specific. It has to be generic enough to be able to be applied to different case studies. So we try to adapt it to the different case studies.